You may have seen this. Back in July, a woman in Oregon left her door open, and a mountain lion walked into her house and ended up taking a six-hour nap behind her couch. And you see the picture she took there through the window. Well, she's one of those new age type of people, and so instead of calling animal control, she decided to communicate with it through telepathy and using feline speak eye blinking. You can't make this stuff up. She said, "I sent telepathic pictures of the routes out of the house." Well, it eventually got up and it left, and of course she thinks it's because of the telepathy. Well, apart from the cowardly lion in The Wizard of Oz, I happen to think lions are pretty intimidating. As you know, lions are a part of the cat family, and they like to eat peas and carrots. No, they're definitely carnivores. They will hunt animals as small as a rabbit or as large as a buffalo, and sometimes a pride of lions, they'll even take on an elephant that's gone astray. Lions can get up to 600 pounds, and they can run over 35 miles an hour, although some people argue that they can actually get up to 50 miles an hour in short bursts. A lion's roar can be heard 5 miles away. I don't know if you've ever been in the large cat section of a zoo and you've heard a lion roar. That's quite an experience. Well, if you would, let's be turning back to the book of Daniel, the last of the major prophets in the Bible. And today we're going to be looking at chapter 6. Now, this is another one of those stories that you probably remember as a kid, hearing in Sunday school and VBS, maybe you even sang songs about it. But it's not really a children's story. Its lessons are for adults as well. Well, as usual, we need to start with some background. Because by the time we get to Daniel chapter 6, we find that Daniel had seen and been through more than most. He saw the fall of his nation to the Babylonians. He was deported from the promised land sent to Babylon. He was chosen, along with some other young men, to serve in the king's court. He made it through his resolve to not eat the king's choice food, which would have defiled an Israelite. He interpreted the king's dream, and he was promoted to a very high position. His friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that's the one we looked at last week, they stood up for their faith, were rescued from the fiery furnace. He saw the king cursed with lycanthropy, you know, thinking he was an animal because of his arrogance. He interpreted the literal writing on the wall for another king, which got him yet another promotion. He saw the armies of Cyrus the Persian conquer the city, now according to Herodotus, by lowering the Euphrates and going under the wall. And then he gave it to Darius the Mede to rule over. That's a guy whose identity scholars like to debate about, since rulers often had more than one name. Now, what you find a lot of times in the drawings of this incident in chapter 6, well, they make Daniel out to be a young man. But Daniel was probably between 16 and 20 when he was captured and brought to Babylon in 605 BC. And that would mean that he was 82 to 86 years old at the beginning of the Medo-Persian Empire, which came about 66 years later in 539 BC. And so he's actually in his 80s at this time. Daniel is a good example of outward aging not causing an inward decline, and of showing the importance of elderly people in the service of God. The context is more about persecution, but 2 Corinthians 4:16 makes the point, "Though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day." And I think Daniel exemplified that. So number one, we got Daniel's dilemma, verses 1 through 9. Let's just start by reading verses 1 through 3. "It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they would be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them 3 commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. So we see that Daniel, he continued to serve as a government official even after the Medes and Persians took over Babylon. Now again, a satrap or a satrap, which means protector of the kingdom, it's kind of like a governor of a province. And suffer loss is probably speaking of the tax money. So Daniel became one of these three commissioners. They're responsible to the king for what the satraps, what they did. Now, this is the third time in Daniel where we find him being promoted. All right, under Nebuchadnezzar chapter 2, under Belshazzar chapter 5, and then here under Darius in chapter 6. And it kind of reminds me of Joseph in the book of Genesis, who kept getting promotions wherever he went. And it seems to be for similar reasons. You notice that his success, it was not due to shrewd, crafty, and manipulative political scheming and maneuvering. Okay, it was due to his extraordinary spirit, proving that someone can be successful in business and politics without compromising character. Now, I don't know if extraordinary spirit is speaking of his wisdom and the fact that God gave him the ability to interpret dreams, or if it's speaking of his attitude and disposition. His outlook was not one of complaints and pessimism. It was positive and thoughtful. Some people think it was because of his integrity and his honesty, and I suspect it included all of that. Whatever it was, it caused Darius and these other guys to look at him and say, well, I want him. I want that guy on my team. So let's think about this. Daniel, he had spent most of his life in exile, away from his family, away from his home, his country, and he's in the midst of just constant pagan influence. And yet, he still had an extraordinary spirit. I know so many people who blame the way they are on their upbringing. I'm this way because of what my parents did. I'm this way because of what happened to me as a child, and so forth. Now, I've told you before about my friend in junior high. He had dreadful parents, just treated him like dirt, wouldn't let him go to church with me even though he wanted to. He had siblings, younger and older, they were awful. They were in and out of juvenile hall. And yet, he was in the midst of all of that, but he was one of the nicest guys I have ever met and acted nothing like the rest of them. You see, we all have free choice and the ability to mold our actions and our attitudes. So what can we learn from this? Bloom where you are planted. Play the cards you were dealt. Life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Turn the stumbling blocks into stepping stones. When the waves of life start rolling in, go surfing. You know, instead of letting them drown you, you let them push you forward and move you forward. We see some great examples of this in Scripture, like Joseph and like Samuel and like Esther. And if you think about it, many of those we consider to be great men and women of history were not dealt the best cards. Things are not always the way we want them to be. We can lie there and whine, using it as an excuse for bad behavior, or we can get up and do something, like Daniel and many others. And so Daniel, he performed as well under King Darius as he would have under King David. He was going to do his best no matter what. Colossians 3 and verse 23, whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord rather than for men. Well, let's continue reading verses 4 and 5. Then the commissioners and satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs. But they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful. No negligence or corruption was to be found in him. Then these men said, "We will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God." And so sadly, as it often happens, jealousy developed. It probably didn't help that Daniel was a foreigner. And it also might have had something to do with his honesty and integrity, which they acknowledged. Now, Josephus, the first century Jewish historian, In his Antiquities of the Jews, he said that Daniel was above all the temptations of money and despised bribery. And so it might have made them uncomfortable that he wasn't involved in the underhanded aspects of politics as they were. People with integrity, who are striving to live righteously, they will sadly be disliked and hated by some people. That's just something you need to keep in mind. You know, for Christians, we're told in 2 Timothy 3, indeed, all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. Now, speaking of jealousy, I'm reminded of James 3:16. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. So these are things that are certainly not to be found among God's people. Be very, very careful with jealousy and envy. There's a good reason why God told the Israelites not to covet in the 10th commandment. A lot of the trouble of this life comes from someone's envy. Think of Cain and Abel. Think of Joseph's brothers. Think of Saul and David. Think of the religious rulers and Jesus. You know, Matthew 27, it says of Pilate, for he knew that because of envy they had handed him over. The problem was that they couldn't dig up any dirt on Daniel. I mean, the muckrakers were working overtime, but they came up empty. I mean, they couldn't even say, you know that Daniel, O king, well, last week he came in 5 minutes late to work twice, and that's just wrong. No respect. I mean, they couldn't even say that. What an example. I mean, Daniel, he was faithful to the king. He was faithful to his job. However, he was also faithful to God, and that is what they figured they could use. They knew that Daniel, if he was forced to choose between the law of the Medes and the Persians and the law of God, well, he's going to choose to obey God. All right, let's read verses 6 through 9. Then these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows. King Darius, live forever. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors, have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document that is the injunction. It's a sad day when government interferes with religion. That's something that we're seeing more and more in this country. You know, there may come a day when many of my sermons that they'll be considered hate speech. And I'll be in danger of a fine, maybe even danger of prison, because I simply spoke against sin. Now, petition, and that's speaking of a prayer of request. What we find throughout culture is these different cultures in the past where they acted as if their rulers were gods, or at least divine in some way. And of course, that sounds really weird to Americans, but it's certainly a fact of history. Now, you notice that they appeal here to Darius's ego. They propose this decree under the guise of their great respect for their king. Using flattery to manipulate people is certainly nothing new. It's a fallacy often referred to as appeal to flattery or ad superbium. Children learn it very young. You know, they come to you and, oh, mom, mommy dearest, I love you so much. You're the best mom in the world. Oh, can I have a cookie? And unlike what they said, we know it wasn't all of the officials and governors, as Daniel was one of them. I mean, they probably just consulted the ones that they knew would be for such a decree, but people will often use this tactic as well. Everyone knows, or everyone believes, to try to bully someone into assent. Now, they probably don't, not everyone, but even if they did, that doesn't automatically make it right. The consensus can and have been wrong many times. And like these guys, there can be ulterior motives. There's a reason why appealing to the majority is called the ad populum or bandwagon fallacy. Now, we can see that the laws of the Medes and Persians, they were unchangeable, even for a king. We find that in the book of Esther as well. That is an odd rule, as laws made by men definitely need to be repealed from time to time. Now, I guess it would have been considered inappropriate for a king to admit that he had signed a faulty law, or I don't know, maybe it was to keep a king from just making rash and impulsive laws. Well, it seems that the Babylonians, at least Nebuchadnezzar, liked to burn people alive, as we saw with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But the Persians, well, they like to throw people into lions' dens. And I read that they would capture lions, they'd put them in cages or pits. It was for this purpose. It's pretty barbaric, but I'm sure the threat of it would keep people in line. Now, again, we're not talking about little kitty cats here. They're going to lick you to death. This is serious. Number two, Daniel's devotion. Start verses 10 and 11. Now, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. In his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Well, verse 10, it says, as he had been doing previously. Okay, he had a regular and a consistent prayer life. There are too many people who treat prayer like one of those boxes with a break glass in case of emergency. But we're told in passages like 1 Thessalonians 5:17, to pray without ceasing. And that means we're to make prayer a great part of our lives. See, like Daniel, do we maintain a good habit of frequent prayers? And we can see that he's not just asking for things, but it says giving thanks. Colossians 4:2, it says, devote yourself to prayer, keeping alert in it with an attitude of thanksgiving. Now, according to the Bible, ingratitude is very displeasing to God. And it makes sense. How do you feel when there's someone you're always doing things for, or they're always asking you for things, and they never thank you? They just act like you owe it to them. And it may be easy to be grateful, you know, and thank God when everything's going well, everything's coming up roses. But what about when it's difficult? Again, Daniel's in exile. And so even though we may be going through the ringer, there's still things that we can be thankful for. Now, hundreds of years earlier, King Solomon, he'd anticipated that God's people would, they'd rebel against God and be taken as captives to a distant land like this. And praying towards Jerusalem, well, that's what Solomon said to do in 1 Kings chapter 8 when dedicating the temple. He prayed, if they return to you with all their heart and with all their soul in the land of their enemies who have taken them captive, and pray to you toward their land, which you have given to their fathers, the city which you have chosen, and the house which I have built for your name, then hear their prayer and their supplication in heaven, your dwelling place, and maintain their cause. Well, you notice that Daniel knew about the law. God has always commanded that his people follow the laws of the land. For Christians, we find passages like Romans 13, Titus 3, and 1 Peter 2. However, there is one notable exception. See, the only time that we're to disobey the laws of the land is when it comes in conflict with what God has said. As the apostles replied in Acts 5:29, we must obey God rather than men. You see, since it was contrary to the law of God, the law of Moses, they would not eat certain unclean food. Daniel chapter 1. They would not worship an idol. Daniel chapter 3. And Daniel would not stop praying to God. Daniel chapter 6. But even in their disobedience, you notice that they were respectful. They acknowledged and they submitted to the king's authority to punish them, even to put them to death if he wanted to, if he decided to do that. And yes, they stood their ground, but they were not rude, they weren't confrontational or rebellious. They obeyed everything else. But talk about a test. It's been said our true faithfulness surfaces in a crisis. It is easy to do what's right when there are no consequences. And Daniel could have easily rationalized, well, it's just 30 days. Surely God won't mind. Or, you know, I ought to show some gratitude to Darius. He's been so good to me. Or, it's just a bit of self-preservation. I'm more useful to God alive. And the rationalizations, they can go on and on. I wonder what mine might have been. But Daniel, he made the decision to not change his actions, nor to try to hide them. See, some people, they wonder, why didn't he just cover the window or close the window or something like that? I suspect that he had come to the conclusion that it would have been a compromise. I find many passages, like 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord. And as Paul, he said about a certain situation in Galatians 2:5, but we did not yield in subjection to them for even an hour. We may not be threatened with a lion's den. But again, we are threatened at times with a loss of popularity, position, pay, or personal relationships. And in some circumstances, we may even be threatened with committing a hate crime when standing against sin. And so, again, like last week, will you determine in advance that you'll be faithful to God regardless of the consequences? You see, a prior determination makes that choice a lot easier if and when it comes. Daniel's eyes were fixed on Jerusalem. Our eyes are to be fixed somewhere as well. Our eyes are to be fixed on Jesus. Hebrews 12, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith. Now, when I read verse 11, okay, I can't help but see the VeggieTales version of this. They throw open the door and enthusiastically yell, aha! But it just bounces right back and closes in their face. And so they throw it back open again, aha! I mean, it's obviously a setup. It's just ridiculous. All right, let's continue reading verses 12 through 15. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den? The king replied, the statement is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. Then they answered and spoke before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition three times a day. Then as soon as the king heard the statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed. Now, you may have noticed here how they didn't refer to Daniel as their fellow administrator, but as that exile from Judah. And this might lend to the idea that their antagonism was partly based on prejudice. That Christian from Missouri, Rolla, Missouri. This is a tactic sometimes referred to as using loaded language or question-begging epithets, using biased or emotional language to try to convince others to accept the position. So, because Darius had signed this foolish, egotistical decree, an innocent man who just so happened that he regarded so highly is going to be put to death. I mean, this guy was his most efficient, trustworthy, and loyal commissioner. And like Darius, I have found that I often regret the decisions that I've made simply from the standpoint of my ego. Number three, Daniel's deliverance. Now, let's read verses 16 through 18. Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. a stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet rings of his nobles, so that nothing would be changed in regard to Daniel. And the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting. No entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. And notice how he said, constantly serve. He'd say it again in verse 20. I think we all need to ask ourselves, could that be said about me? There are too many people who just serve God when it's convenient. Now, these are pretty remarkable words from a pagan king, but it could be translated as in the NIV, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. I mean, his restless night showed that he wasn't so sure about that. Daniel was most likely Meow Mix. And so Darius, he spent the night probably pacing like a lion. Looking at verse 17, they'd usually seal something like this with clay or wax, you know, something that you could make an imprint of the signet ring and harden. And so that would keep people from trying to rescue him, but it was also so no one could claim that Darius didn't obey his own law. So can you imagine what it would have been like to be thrown into this thing, you know, chucked into that den? And this makes me think, I don't know if you remember this, the guy who jumped into the tiger den at the Bronx Zoo back in 2012, that was so he could, quote, become one with the tiger. Well, that was a single, well-fed tiger, and they rescued him. I mean, he was rescued fairly quickly, but he still received bites and punctures on his arms, legs, shoulders, and back, as well as a broken shoulder, broken rib, broken ankle, broken pelvis, and a collapsed lung. That was just the cat playing with its food. Now, whether or not Daniel expected God to deliver him, that didn't alter his faith. I suspect he is preparing to die. Now, I'm reminded of what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, chapter 3. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Period. All right, let's go on and read verses 19 through 23. Then the king arose at dawn, at the break of day, and went in haste to the lion's den. When he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel spoke to the king, O king, live forever. That was their common greeting. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him. And also toward you, O king, I have committed no crime. And the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. Now take a note of that word because there in verse 23. We're not always promised physical deliverance, but we are told in Romans 8:28 that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. And it's been pointed out that God didn't deliver Daniel out of the lion's den, but rather helped him in it. See, we often want to be airlifted out of our troubles and our problems and our difficulties, but God doesn't always work that way. Daniel still had to deal with the stress and the smell and, I suspect, a stiff neck and back from spending a night in a lion's den. He told Darius that he had been rescued by an angel, and then he reminded him that, you know, he'd done nothing worthy of death. Quite a few artists have tried to depict this scene. Sometimes they actually get it right and make him an old man. Well, verse 24, the king then gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them, their children, and their wives into the lion's den. And they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. So that proved that the lions were indeed hungry. They'd have been more than happy to eat Daniel if God hadn't sent his angel. And I assume it was just the other two commissioners, but it might have included some of the satraps. So the king, he wanted to make a statement here. And so he had their wives and children thrown in with them, which was, it was a Persian custom for really bad crimes. It's not always this drastic, but many times others have to suffer for our actions. Now, that's an important thing to keep in mind as we're making our daily decisions. Now, we always like it when justice is served, don't we? People, they get what's coming to them. How many books, how many movies are based on that premise, on that theme? It doesn't always happen in this lifetime, but there will be a judgment day at the end of time. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, Paul said, "We ourselves speak proudly of you among the churches of God for your perseverance and faith in the midst of all your persecutions and afflictions which you endure. This is a plain indication of God's righteous judgment so that you will be considered worthy of the kingdom of God, for which indeed you are suffering. For after all, it is only just for God to repay with affliction those who afflict you, and to give relief to you who are afflicted, and to us as well. And the Lord Jesus will be revealed from heaven with his mighty angels in flaming fire." Now let's finish the chapter with verses 25 to 28. "Then Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language who are living in all the land, 'May your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the domain of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and enduring forever. And his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his domain will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions.' So this Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian." Well, this is obviously due to Daniel's teachings. And I would assume that Daniel showed him the scriptures where Cyrus's coming was predicted, you know, in Isaiah 44 and 45, and that the Babylonian kingdom would only last 70 years, and as prophesied by Jeremiah. And I don't know, he might have also told him about the 10 plagues and other things like that. So Daniel, he'd been a great influence on the king. And so those in the kingdom, they now had to respect the God of Daniel. Yeah, they probably just... they just added the God of Israel to their long list of gods, you know, their pantheon. And, you know, how long that decree lasted or how long people paid attention to it, I don't know, probably not very long. But it's really cool that it happened at all. And so Daniel, he finished out his life enjoying success in the reigns of Darius and Cyrus. They ruled at the same time. This Darius was just ruling in Babylon. And so, why was that the case with Daniel? Well, it was because of his extraordinary spirit and his obedience to God. And I'm reminded of 1 Peter 3. "Let him who means to love life and see good days refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile. And let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it." And the question for you and me, do we mean to love life and see good days? God was speaking to Ezekiel, who's a contemporary of Daniel, in Ezekiel chapter 14, and said, "If a country sins against me by committing unfaithfulness, and I stretch out my hand against it, destroy its supply of bread, send famine against it, and cut off from it both man and beast, even though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in its midst, by their own righteousness, they could only deliver themselves." And so God, you see, he put Daniel up there with Noah and Job and giving a sample of righteous men. Well, after looking at Daniel 6, I think I know why. So what was Daniel's secret? Well, he had an extraordinary spirit. He was a man of integrity. They couldn't dig up any dirt on him. He had a consistent prayer life, which included the gratitude attitude. He chose to obey God rather than men, and he had great faith in God. See, Hebrews 11:33 speaks of, by faith, shutting the mouths of lions. The thing is, we all have a lion after us. 1 Peter 5:8. "Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour." Well, I believe that these are the things that are going to help us overcome and shut the mouth of this lion.